Chapter 16. Inspector Neil found Mrs. Percival in her own sitting room upstairs, writing letters. She got up rather nervously when he came in.
Is there anything... What? Are there...
Please, sit down, Mrs. Fortescue. There are only just a few more questions I would like to ask you.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course, Inspector. It's all so dreadful, isn't it? So very dreadful.
She sat down, rather nervously, in an armchair. Inspector Neil sat down in the small straight chair near her. He studied her rather more carefully than he had done heretofore. In some ways a mediocre type of woman, he thought, and thought also that she was not very happy, restless, unsatisfied, limited in mental outlook. Yet he thought she might have been efficient and skilled in her own profession of hospital nurse. Though she had achieved leisure by her marriage with a well-to-do man, leisure had not satisfied her. She bought clothes, read novels, and ate sweets. But he remembered her avid excitement on the night of Rex Fortescue's death, and he saw in it not so much a ghoulish satisfaction, but rather a revelation of the arid deserts of boredom which encompassed her life. Her eyelids fluttered and fell before his searching glance. They gave her the appearance of being both nervous and guilty, but he could not be sure that that was really the case. "I'm afraid," he said soothingly, "we have to ask people questions again and again. It must be very tiresome for you all. I do appreciate that. But so much hangs, you understand, on the exact timing of events. You came down to tea rather late, I understand. In fact, Miss Dove came up and fetched you."
"Yes, yes, she did. She came in and said tea was in. I had no idea it was so late. I'd been writing letters."
Inspector Neil just glanced over at the writing desk. "I see," he said. "Somehow or other, I thought you'd been out for a walk."
"Did she say so?" "Yes. Now, I believe you're right. I had been writing letters. Then it was so stuffy and my head ached so I went out and went for a walk. Only round the garden."
"I see. You didn't meet anyone?"
"Meet anyone?"
She stared at him.
"What do you mean?"
"Just wondered if you'd seen anybody or anybody had seen you during this walk of yours."
"I saw the gardener in the distance, that's all."
She was looking at him suspiciously. "Then you came in, came up here to your room, and you were just taking your things off when Miss Dove came to tell you that tea was ready?"
"Yes, yes, and so I came down."
"And who was there?"
"Adele and Elaine, and a minute or two later Lance arrived, my brother-in-law, you know, the one who's back from Kenya."
"And then you all had tea?"
"Yes, we had tea. Then Lance went up to see Aunt Effie, and I came up here to finish my letters. I left Elaine there with Adele."
He nodded reassuringly. "Yes. Miss Fortescue seems to have been with Mrs. Fortescue for quite 5 or 10 minutes after you left. Your husband hadn't come home yet?"
"Oh, no. Percy, Val, didn't get home until about 6:30 or 7. He'd been kept up in town."
"He came by train?"
"Yes, he took a taxi from the station."
"Was it unusual for him to come back by train?"
"He does sometimes, not very often. I think he'd been to places in the city where it's rather difficult to park the car. It was easier for him to take a train home from Cannon Street."
"I see," said Inspector Neil. He went on. "I asked your husband if Mrs. Fortescue had made a will before she died. He said he thought not. I suppose you don't happen to have any idea?" To his surprise, Jennifer Fortescue nodded vigorously.
"Oh, yes," she said. "Adele made a will. She told me so."
"Indeed. When was this?"
"Oh, it wasn't very long ago. About 1 month ago, I think."
"That's very interesting," said Inspector Neil. Mrs. Percival leant forward eagerly. Her face now was all animation. She clearly enjoyed exhibiting her superior knowledge.
"Val didn't know about it," she said. "Nobody knew.
It just happened that I found out about it. I was in the street. I had just come out of the stationer's. Then I saw Adele coming out of the solicitor's office. Ansell and Worrell's, you know, in the High Street.
Ah, said Neil. The local solicitors.
Yes. And I said to Adele, whatever have you been doing there? And she laughed and said, wouldn't you like to know? And then, as we walked along together, she said, I'll tell you, Jennifer, I've been making my will. Well, I said, why are you doing that, Adele? You're not ill or anything, are you? And she said, no, of course she wasn't ill. She'd never felt better. But everyone ought to make a will. She said she wasn't going to those stuck-up family solicitors in London, Mr. Billingsley. She said the old sneak would go round and tell the family. No, she said. My will's my own business, Jennifer, and I'll make it my own way, and nobody's going to know about it. Well, Adele, I said, I shan't tell anybody. She said, it doesn't matter if you do. You won't know what's in it. But I didn't tell anyone. No, not even Percy. I do think women ought to stick together, don't you, Inspector Neil?
I'm sure that's a very nice feeling on your part, Mrs. Fortescue, said Inspector Neil diplomatically.
I'm sure I'm never ill-natured, said Jennifer. I didn't particularly care for Adele, if you know what I mean. I always thought she was the kind of woman who would stick at nothing in order to get what she wanted. Now she's dead, perhaps I misjudged her, poor soul.
Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Fortescue, for being so helpful to me.
You're welcome, I'm sure. I'm only too glad to do anything I can. It's all so very terrible, isn't it? Who is the old lady who's arrived this morning?
She's a Miss Marple. She very kindly came here to give us what information she could about the girl Gladys. It seems Gladys Martin was once in service with her.
Really? How interesting.
There's one other thing, Mrs. Percival. Do you know anything about blackbirds?
Jennifer Fortescue started violently.
She dropped her handbag on the floor and bent to pick it up.
Blackbirds, Inspector? Blackbirds? What kind of blackbirds?
Her voice was rather breathless.
Smiling a little, Inspector Neil said,
Just blackbirds. Alive or dead or even, shall we say, symbolical.
Jennifer Fortescue said sharply, I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know anything about blackbirds, then, Mrs. Fortescue?
She said slowly, I suppose you mean the ones last summer in the pie. All very silly.
There were some left on the library table, too, weren't there?
It was all a very silly practical joke. I don't know who's been talking to you about it. Mr. Fortescue, my father-in-law, was very much annoyed by it.
Just annoyed? Nothing more?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, I suppose... Yes, it's true. He asked us if there were any strangers about the place.
Strangers?
Inspector Neil raised his eyebrows. Well, that's what he said, said Mrs. Percival defensively.
Strangers, repeated Inspector Neil thoughtfully.
Then he asked, did he seem afraid in any way? Afraid? I don't know what you mean.
Nervous. About strangers, I mean.
Yes. Yes, he did, rather. Of course, I don't remember very well. It was several months ago, you know. I don't think it was anything except a silly practical joke. Crump, perhaps. I really do think that Crump is a very unbalanced man, and I'm perfectly certain that he drinks. He's really very insolent in his manner sometimes. I've sometimes wondered if he could have had a grudge against Mr. Fortescue. Do you think that's possible, Inspector?
Anything's possible, said Inspector Neil, and went away. Percival Fortescue was in London, but Inspector Neil found Lancelot sitting with his wife in the library. They were playing chess together.
I don't want to interrupt you, said Neil apologetically.
We're only killing time, Inspector, aren't we, Pat?
Pat nodded.
I expect you'll think it's rather a foolish question I'm asking you, said Neil. Do you know anything about blackbirds, Mr. Fortescue?
Blackbirds? Lance looked amused. What kind of blackbirds? Do you mean genuine birds or the slave trade?
Inspector Neil said with a sudden, disarming smile,
I'm not sure what I mean, Mr. Fortescue. It's just that a mention of blackbirds has turned up.
Good Lord! Lancelot looked suddenly alert.
Not the old blackbird mine, I suppose.
Inspector Neil said sharply,
The blackbird mine? What was that?
Lance frowned in a puzzled fashion.
The trouble is, Inspector, that I can't really remember much myself. I just have a vague idea about some shady transaction in my papa's past. Something on the west coast of Africa. Aunt Effie, I believe, once threw it in his teeth, but I can't remember anything definite about it.
Aunt Effie, that will be Miss Ramsbottom, won't it?
Yes.
I'll go and ask her about it, said Inspector Neil. He added ruefully, She's rather a formidable old lady, Mr. Fortescue. Always makes me feel quite nervous.
Lance laughed. Yes, Aunt Effie is certainly a character, but she may be helpful to you, Inspector, if you get on the right side of her, especially if you're delving into the past. She's got an excellent memory. She takes a positive pleasure in remembering anything that's detrimental in any way.
He added thoughtfully,
There's something else. I went up to see her, you know, soon after I got back here. Immediately after tea, that day, as a matter of fact, and she was talking about Gladys, the maid who got killed. Not that we knew she was dead then, of course, but Aunt Effie was saying she was quite convinced that Gladys knew something that she hadn't told the police.
That seems fairly certain, said Inspector Neil. She'll never tell it now, poor girl.
No. It seems Aunt Effie had given her good advice as to spilling anything she knew. Pity the girl didn't take it.
Inspector Neil nodded.
Bracing himself for the encounter, he penetrated to Miss Ramsbottom's fortress. Rather to his surprise, he found Miss Marple there. The two ladies appeared to be discussing foreign missions.
I'll go away, Inspector.
Miss Marple rose hurriedly to her feet.
No need, madam, said Inspector Neil.
I have asked Miss Marple to come and stay in the house, said Miss Ramsbottom. No sense in spending money in that ridiculous golf hotel. A wicked nest of profiteers, that is, drinking and card-playing all the evening. She had better come and stay in a decent Christian household. There's a room next door to mine. Dr. Mary Peters, the missionary, had it last.
It's very, very kind of you, said Miss Marple, but I really think I mustn't intrude in a house of mourning.
Mourning? Fiddlesticks, said Miss Ramsbottom. Who'll weep for Rex in this house? Or Adele, either? Or is it the police you're worried about? Any objections, Inspector?
None from me, madam.
There you are, said Miss Ramsbottom.
It's very kind of you, said Miss Marple gratefully. I'll go and telephone to the hotel to cancel my booking. She left the room.
Miss Ramsbottom said sharply to the inspector,
Well, and what do you want?
I wondered if you could tell me anything about the Blackbird Mine, ma'am.
Miss Ramsbottom uttered a sudden shrill cackle of laughter.
Ha! You've got on to that, have you? Took the hint I gave you the other day. Well, what do you want to know about it?
Anything you can tell me, madam.
I can't tell you much. It's a long time ago now. Oh, 20 to 25 years, maybe. Some concession or other in East Africa. My brother-in-law went into it with a man called Mackenzie. They went out there to investigate the mine together, and Mackenzie died out there, of fever. Rex came home and said the claim, or the concession, or whatever you call it, was worthless. That's all I know.
I think you know a little more than that, ma'am, said Neil persuasively.
Anything else is hearsay. You don't like hearsay in the law, so I've been told.
We're not in court yet, ma'am.
Well, I can't tell you anything. The Mackenzies kicked up a fuss, that's all I know. They insisted that Rex had swindled Mackenzie. I dare say he did. He was a clever, unscrupulous fellow. But I've no doubt whatever he did, it was all legal. They couldn't prove anything. Mrs. Mackenzie was an unbalanced sort of woman. She came here and made a lot of threats of revenge, said Rex had murdered her husband. Silly, melodramatic fuss. I think she was a bit off her head. In fact, I believe she went into an asylum not long after. Came here dragging along a couple of young children who looked scared to death. Said she'd bring up her children to have revenge. Something like that. Tomfoolery, all of it. Well, that's all I can tell you. And mind you, the Blackbird Mine wasn't the only swindle that Rex put over in his lifetime. You'll find a good many more if you look for them. What put you on the Blackbird? Did you come across some trail leading to the Mackenzies?
You don't know what became of the family, ma'am.
No idea, said Miss Ramsbottom. Mind you, I don't think Rex would have actually murdered Mackenzie, but he might have left him to die. The same thing before the Lord, but not the same thing before the law. If he did, retribution's caught up with him. The mills of God grind slowly, but they grind exceeding small. You'd better go away now. I can't tell you any more, and it's no good your asking.
Thank you very much for what you have told me, said Inspector Neil.
Send that Marple woman back, Miss Ramsbottom called after him. She's frivolous, like all Church of England people, but she knows how to run a charity in a sensible way.
Inspector Neil made a couple of telephone calls, the first to Ansell and Worrell, and the second to the Golf Hotel. Then he summoned Sergeant Hay and told him that he was leaving the house for a short period.
I've a short call to pay at a solicitor's office. After that, you can get me at the Golf Hotel if anything urgent turns up.
Yes, sir.
And find out anything you can about blackbirds, added Neil over his shoulder.
Blackbirds, sir?
Sergeant Hay repeated, thoroughly mystified.
That's what I said. Not blackberry jelly, blackbirds.
Very good, sir, said Sergeant Hay, bewilderedly.
Chapter 17 Inspector Neil found Mr. Ansell, the type of solicitor who was more easily intimidated than intimidating. A member of a small and not very prosperous firm, he was anxious not to stand upon his rights, but instead to assist the police in every way possible. Yes, he said, he had made a will for the late Mrs. Adele Fortescue. She had called at his office about 5 weeks previously. It had seemed to him rather a peculiar business, but naturally he had not said anything. Peculiar things did happen in a solicitor's business, and of course the inspector would understand that discretion, etc., etc. The inspector nodded to show he understood. He had already discovered Mr. Ansell had not transacted any legal business previously for Mrs. Fortescue, or for any of the Fortescue family.
Naturally, said Mr. Ansell, she didn't want to go to her husband's firm of lawyers about this.
Shorn of verbiage, the facts were simple. Adele Fortescue had made a will, leaving everything of which she died possessed to Vivian Dubois.
But I gathered, said Mr. Ansell, looking at Neil in an interrogating manner, that she hadn't actually much to leave.
Inspector Neil nodded. At the time Adele Fortescue made her will, that was true enough. But since then, Rex Fortescue had died, and Adele Fortescue had inherited £100,000, and presumably that £100,000, less death duties, now belonged to Vivian Edward Dubois. At the Golf Hotel, Inspector Neil found Vivian Dubois nervously awaiting his arrival. Dubois had been on the point of leaving. Indeed, his bags were packed when he had received over the telephone a civil request from Inspector Neil to remain. Inspector Neil had been very pleasant about it, quite apologetic, but behind the conventional words, the request had been an order. Vivian Dubois had demurred, but not too much. He said now,
I do hope you realise, Inspector Neil, that it is very inconvenient for me to have to stay on. I really have urgent business that needs attending to.
I didn't know you were in business, Mr. Dubois, said Inspector Neil, genially.
I'm afraid none of us can be as leisured as we would like to appear to be nowadays.
Mrs. Fortescue's death must have been a great shock to you, Mr. Dubois. You were great friends, were you not?
Yes, said Dubois. She was a charming woman.
We played golf quite often together.
I expect you miss her very much.
Yes, indeed, Dubois sighed. The whole thing is really quite terrible.
You actually telephoned her, I believe, on the afternoon of her death.
Did I?
I really cannot remember now. About 4 o'clock, I understand.
Yes, I believe I did.
Don't you remember what your conversation was about, Mr. Dubois?
It wasn't of any significance. I think I asked her how she was feeling and if there was any further news about her husband's death, a more or less conventional inquiry.
I see, said Inspector Neil. He added, and then you went out for a walk?
Yes, I did, I think. At least not a walk. I played a few holes of golf.
Inspector Neil said gently, I think not, Mr. Dubois. Not that particular day. The porter here noticed you walking down the road towards Yew Tree Lodge.
Dubois' eyes met his, then shied away again nervously. I'm afraid I can't remember, Inspector.
Perhaps you actually went to call upon Mrs. Fortescue.
Dubois said sharply, No, no, I didn't do that. I never went near the house.
Where did you go then?
Oh, I went on down the road, down as far as the Three Pigeons, and then I turned around and came back by the links.
You're quite sure you didn't go to Yew Tree Lodge?
Quite sure, Inspector.
The Inspector shook his head. Come now, Mr. Dubois, he said. It's much better to be frank with us, you know. You may have had some quite innocent reason for going there.
I tell you, I never went up to see Mrs. Fortescue that day.
The inspector stood up. You know, Mr. Dubois, he said pleasantly, I think we'll have to ask you for a statement. And you'll be well advised, and quite within your rights, in having a solicitor present when you are making your statement.
The colour fled from Mr. Dubois' face, leaving it a sickly greenish colour.
You're threatening me, he said. You're threatening me.
No, no, nothing of the kind. Inspector Neil spoke in a shocked voice. We're not allowed to do anything of that sort. Quite the contrary. I'm actually pointing out to you that you have certain rights.
I had nothing to do with it all, I tell you. Nothing to do with it.
Come now, Mr. Dubois. You were at Yew Tree Lodge round 4:30 on that day. Somebody looked out of the window, you know, and saw you.
I was only in the garden. I didn't go into the house.
Didn't you? Said Inspector Neil. Are you sure? Didn't you go in by the side door and up the stairs to Mrs. Fortescue's sitting room on the first floor? You were looking for something, weren't you, in the desk there?
You've got them, I suppose, said Dubois sullenly. That fool Adèle kept them. Then she swore she burnt them. But they don't mean what you think they mean.
You're not denying, are you, Mr. Dubois, that you were a very close friend of Mrs. Fortescue's?
No, of course I'm not. How can I say that when you have got the letters? All I say is there's no need to go reading any sinister meaning into them. Don't think for a moment that she ever thought of getting rid of Rex Fortescue. Good God, I'm not that kind of man.
But perhaps she was that kind of woman?
Nonsense, cried Vivian Dubois. Wasn't she killed too?
Oh, yes.
Well, isn't it natural to believe that the same person who killed her husband killed her?
It might be. It certainly might be. But there are other solutions. For instance, this is quite a hypothetical case, Mr. Dubois. It's possible that Mrs. Fortescue got rid of her husband, and that after his death she became somewhat of a danger to someone else. Someone who had, perhaps, not helped her in what she had done, but who had at least encouraged her, and provided, shall we say, the motive for the deed. She might be, you know, a danger to that particular person.
Dubois stammered, "You can't build up a case against me. You can't."
"She made a will, you know," said Inspector Neil. "She left all her money to you, everything she possessed."
"I don't want the money. I don't want a penny of it."
"Of course it isn't very much, really," said Inspector Neil. "There's jewellery and some furs, but I imagine very little actual cash."
Dubois stared at him, his jaw dropping. "But I thought her husband..."
He stopped dead. "Did you, Mr. Dubois?" said Inspector Neil, and there was steel now in his voice. "That's very interesting. I wondered if you knew the terms of Rex Fortescue's will."
Inspector Neil's second interview at the Golf Hotel was with Mr. Gerald Wright. Mr. Gerald Wright was a thin, intellectual, and very superior young man. He was, Inspector Neil noted, not unlike Vivian Dubois in build.
"What can I do for you, Inspector Neil?" he asked.
"I thought you might be able to help us with a little information, Mr. Wright."
"Information? Really? It seems very unlikely."
"It's in connection with the recent events at Yew Tree Lodge. You've heard of them, of course." Inspector Neil put a little irony into the question. Mr. Wright smiled patronizingly.
"Heard of them," he said, "is hardly the right word. The newspapers appear to be full of nothing else. How incredibly bloodthirsty our public press is. What an age we live in. On one side, the manufacturer of atom bombs. On the other, our newspapers delight in reporting brutal murders. But you said you had some questions to ask. Really, I cannot see what they can be. I know nothing about this Yew Tree Lodge affair. I was actually in the Isle of Man when Mr. Rex Fortescue was killed."
"You arrived here very shortly afterwards, didn't you, Mr. Wright? You had a telegram, I believe, from Miss Elaine Fortescue."
"Our police know everything, do they not? Yes, Elaine sent for me. I came, of course, at once."
"And you are, I understand, shortly to be married."
"Quite right, Inspector. You have no objections, I hope?"
"It is entirely Miss Fortescue's business."
"I understand the attachment between you dates from some time back. 6 or 7 months ago, in fact."
"Quite correct."
"You and Miss Fortescue became engaged to be married, but Mr. Fortescue refused to give his consent, and informed you that if his daughter married against his wishes, he did not propose to give her an income of any kind. Whereupon, I understand, you broke off the engagement and departed."
Gerald Wright smiled rather pityingly.
"A very crude way of putting things, Inspector Neil. Actually, I was victimised for my political opinions. Rex Fortescue was the worst type of capitalist. Naturally, I could not sacrifice my political beliefs and convictions for money."
"But you have no objections to marrying a wife who has just inherited £50,000. Gerald Wright gave a thin, satisfied smile.
"Not at all, Inspector Neil. The money will be used for the benefit of the community. But surely you did not come here to discuss with me either my financial circumstances or my political convictions?"
"No, Mr. Wright. I wanted to talk to you about a simple question of fact. As you are aware, Mrs. Adele Fortescue died as a result of cyanide poisoning on the afternoon of November 1st. Since you were in the neighbourhood of Yew Tree Lodge on that afternoon, I thought it possible you might have seen or heard something that had a bearing on the case."
"And what leads you to believe that I was, as you call it, in the neighbourhood of Yew Tree Lodge at the time?"
"You left this hotel at 4:15 on that particular afternoon, Mr. Wright. On leaving the hotel, you walked down the road in the direction of Yew Tree Lodge. It seems natural to suppose that you were going there."
"I thought of it," said Gerald Wright. "But I considered that it would be a rather pointless thing to do. I already had an arrangement to meet Miss Fortescue, Elaine, at the hotel at 6:00.
I went for a walk along a lane that branches off from the main road and returned to the Golf Hotel just before 6 o'clock. Elaine did not keep her appointment, quite naturally under the circumstances.
Anybody see you on this walk of yours, Mr. Wright?
A few cars passed me, I think, on the road. I did not see anyone I know, if that's what you mean. The lane was little more than a cart track, and too muddy for cars.
So between the time you left the hotel at 4:15 until 6 o'clock when you arrived back again, I've only your word for it as to where you were.
Gerald Wright continued to smile in a superior fashion.
Very distressing for us both, Inspector, but there it is.
Inspector Neil said softly, Then if someone said they looked out of a landing window and saw you in the garden of Yew Tree Lodge at 4:35... He paused and left the sentence unfinished. Gerald Wright raised his eyebrows and shook his head.
"Visibility must have been very bad by then," he said. "I think it would be difficult for anyone to be sure."
"Are you acquainted with Mr. Vivian Dubois, who is also staying here?"
"Dubois? No, I don't think so. Is that the tall, dark man with a pretty taste in suede shoes?"
"Yes."
He also was out for a walk that afternoon, and he also left the hotel and walked past Yew Tree Lodge. You did not notice him in the road, by any chance?
No, I can't say I did.
Gerald Wright looked, for the first time, faintly worried.
Inspector Neil said thoughtfully, It wasn't really a very nice afternoon for walking, especially after dark, in a muddy lane. Curious how energetic everyone seems to have felt.
On Inspector Neil's return to the house, he was greeted by Sergeant Hay with an air of satisfaction.
"I've found out about the blackbirds for you, sir," he said.
"You have you?"
"Yes, sir. In a pie they were. Cold pie was left out for Sunday night's supper. Somebody got at that pie in the larder or somewhere. They'd taken off the crust, and they'd taken out the veal and ham, what was inside it, and what do you think they put in instead? Some stinking blackbirds they got out of the gardener's shed. Nasty sort of trick to play, wasn't it?"
"Wasn't that a dainty dish to set before the king?" said Inspector Neil. He left Sergeant Hay staring after him.
Chapter 18
"Just wait a minute," said Miss Ramsbottom. "This patience is going to come out."
She transferred a king and his various impedimenta into an empty space, put a red 7 on a black 8, built up the 4, 5, and 6 of spades on her foundation heap, made a few more rapid transfers of cards, and then leaned back with a sigh of satisfaction.
"That's the double jester," she said. "It doesn't often come out."
She leaned back in a satisfied fashion, then raised her eyes at the girl standing by the fireplace.
"So you're Lance's wife," she said.
Pat, who had been summoned upstairs to Miss Ramsbottom's presence, nodded her head. "Yes," she said.
"You're a tall girl," said Miss Ramsbottom, "and you look healthy."
"I'm very healthy,"
Miss Ramsbottom nodded in a satisfied manner.
"Percival's wife is pasty," she said. "Eats too many sweets and doesn't take enough exercise. Well, sit down, child, sit down. Where did you meet my nephew?"
"I met him out in Kenya when I was staying there with some friends."
"You've been married before, I understand."
"Yes, twice."
Miss Ramsbottom gave a profound sniff.
"Divorce, I suppose."
"No," said Pat. Her voice trembled a little. "They both died. My first husband was a fighter pilot. He was killed in the war."
"And your second husband? Let me see, somebody told me. Shot himself, didn't he?"
Pat nodded.
"Your fault?"
"No," said Pat. "It wasn't my fault."
"Racing man, wasn't he?"
"Yes."
"I've never been on a race course in my life,"
said Miss Ramsbottom.
"Betting and card playing, all devices of the devil."
Pat did not reply.
"I wouldn't go inside a theatre or a cinema," said Miss Ramsbottom. "Ah, well, it's a wicked world nowadays. A lot of wickedness was going on in the house, but the Lord struck them down."
Pat still found it difficult to say anything. She wondered if Lance's Aunt Effie was really quite all there. She was, however, a trifle disconcerted by the old lady's shrewd glance at her.
"How much," demanded Aunt Effie, "do you know about the family you've married into?"
"I suppose," said Pat, "as much as one ever knows of the family one marries into."
"Something in that. Something in that. Well, I'll tell you this. My sister was a fool, my brother-in-law was a rogue, Percival is a sneak, and your Lance was always the bad boy of the family."
"I think that's all nonsense," said Pat robustly.
"Maybe you're right," said Miss Ramsbottom unexpectedly. "You can't just stick labels on people, but don't underestimate Percival. There's a tendency to believe that those who are labelled good are also stupid. Percival isn't the least bit stupid. He's quite clever in a sanctimonious kind of way. I've never cared for him. Mind you, I don't trust Lance and I don't approve of him, but I can't help being fond of him. He's a reckless sort of fellow, always has been. You've got to look after him and see he doesn't go too far. Tell him not to underestimate Percival, my dear. Tell him not to believe everything that Percival says. They're all liars in this house."
The old lady added with satisfaction,
"Fire and brimstone shall be their portion."
Inspector Neil was finishing a telephone conversation with Scotland Yard. The assistant commissioner at the other end said,
"We ought to be able to get that information for you by circularising the various private sanatoriums. Of course, she may be dead."
"Probably is. It's a long time ago. Old sins cast long shadows." Miss Ramsbottom had said that, said it with significance too, as though she was giving him a hint.
"It's a fantastic theory," said the A.C. "Don't I know it, sir.
But I don't feel we can ignore it altogether. Too much fits in."
"Yes, yes. Rye, blackbirds, the man's Christian name."
Neil said,
"I'm concentrating on the other lines, too. Dubois is a possibility. So is Wright. The girl Gladys could have caught sight of either of them outside the side door. She could have left the tea tray in the hall and gone out to see who it was and what they were doing. Whoever it was could have strangled her then and there and carried her body round to the clothesline and put the peg on her nose."
"A crazy thing to do, in all conscience. A nasty one, too."
"Yes, sir. That's what upset the old lady. Miss Marple, I mean. Nice old lady, and very shrewd. She's moved into the house to be near old Miss Ramsbottom, and I've no doubt she'll get to hear anything that's going."
"What's your next move, Neil?"
"I've an appointment with the London solicitors. I want to find out a little more about Rex Fortescue's affairs. And though it's old history, I want to hear a little more about the Blackbird Mine." Mr. Billingsley, of Billingsley, Horsthorpe and Walters, was an urbane man whose discretion was concealed habitually by a misleadingly forthcoming manner. It was the second interview that Inspector Neil had had with him, and on this occasion Mr. Billingsley's discretion was less noticeable than it had been on the former one. The triple tragedy at Yew Tree Lodge had shaken Mr. Billingsley out of his professional reserve. He was now only too anxious to put all the facts he could before the police.
"Most extraordinary business, this whole thing," he said. "A most extraordinary business. I don't remember anything like it in all my professional career."
"Frankly, Mr. Billingsley," said Inspector Neil, "we need all the help we can get."
"You can count on me, my dear sir. I shall be only too happy to assist you in every way I can."
"First, let me ask you how well you knew the late Mr. Fortescue, and how well do you know the affairs of his firm?"
"I knew Rex Fortescue fairly well. That is to say, I've known him for a period of, well, 16 years, I should say. Mind you,
We are not the only firm of solicitors he employed, not by a long way.
Inspector Neil nodded. He knew that. Billingsley, Horsthorpe and Walters were what one might describe as Rex Fortescue's reputable solicitors. For his less reputable dealings, he had employed several different and slightly less scrupulous firms.
"Now, what do you want to know?" continued Mr. Billingsley. "I've told you about his will. Percival Fortescue is the residuary legatee."
"I'm interested now," said Inspector Neil, "in the will of his widow. On Mr. Fortescue's death, she came into the sum of £100,000, I understand." Billingsley nodded his head.
"A considerable sum of money," he said. "And I may tell you in confidence, Inspector, that it is one the firm could ill have afforded to pay out."
"The firm, then, is not prosperous?"
"Frankly," said Mr. Billingsley, "and strictly between ourselves, it's drifting on the rocks, and has been for the last year and a half."
"For any particular reason?"
"Why, yes. I should say the reason was Rex Fortescue himself. For the last year, Rex Fortescue's been acting like a madman, selling good stock here, buying speculative stuff there, talking big about it all the time in the most extraordinary way. Wouldn't listen to advice. Percival, the son, you know, he came here urging me to use my influence with his father. He'd tried, apparently, and been swept aside. Well, I did what I could. But Fortescue wouldn't listen to reason. Really, he seems to have been a changed man."
"But not, I gather, a depressed man," said Inspector Neil.
"No, no, quite the contrary. Flamboyant, bombastic."
Inspector Neil nodded. An idea which had already taken form in his mind was strengthened. He thought he was beginning to understand some of the causes of friction between Percival and his father. Mr. Billingsley was continuing.
"But it's no good asking me about the wife's will. I didn't make any will for her."
"No, I know that," said Neil. "I'm merely verifying that she had something to leave. In short, £100,000. Mr. Billingsley was shaking his head violently.
"No, no, my dear sir, you are wrong there."
"Do you mean the £100,000 was only left to her for her lifetime?"
"No, no, it was left to her outright. But there was a clause in the will governing that bequest. That is to say, Fortescue's wife did not inherit the sum unless she survived him for 1 month. That, I may say, is a clause fairly common nowadays. It has come into operation owing to the uncertainties of air travel. If two people are killed in an air accident, it becomes exceedingly difficult to say who was the survivor, and a lot of curious problems arise."
Inspector Neil was staring at him. "Then Adele Fortescue had not got £100,000 to leave. What happened to that money?"
"It goes back into the firm. Or rather, I should say, it goes to the residuary legatee."
"And the residuary legatee is Mr. Percival Fortescue?"
"That's right," said Billingsley. "It goes to Percival Fortescue. And with the state the firm's affairs are in," he added unguardedly, "I should say that he'll need it."
"The things you policemen want to know," said Inspector Neil's doctor friend. "Come on, Bob, spill it."
"Well, as we're alone together, you can't quote me, fortunately. But I should say, you know, that your idea's dead right. General paralysis of the insane, by the sound of it all. The family suspected it and wanted to get him to see a doctor. He wouldn't. It acts just in the way you describe. Loss of judgment, megalomania, violent fits of irritation and anger, boastfulness, delusions of grandeur, of being a great financial genius. Anyone suffering from that would soon put a solvent firm on the rocks, unless he could be restrained. And that's not so easy to do, especially if the man himself has an idea of what you're after. Yes, I should say it was a bit of luck for your friends that he died."
"They're no friends of mine," said Neil. He repeated what he had once said before.
They're all very unpleasant people.
Chapter 19. In the drawing-room at Yew Tree Lodge, the whole Fortescue family was assembled. Percival Fortescue, leaning against the mantelpiece, was addressing the meeting.
"It's all very well," said Percival, "but the whole position is most unsatisfactory. The police come and go and don't tell us anything. One supposes they're pursuing some line of research. In the meantime, everything's at a standstill. One can't make plans. One can't arrange things for the future."
"It's all so inconsiderate," said Jennifer, "and so stupid."
"There still seems to be this ban against anyone leaving the house," went on Percival. "Still, I think among ourselves we might discuss future plans. What about you, Elaine? I gather you're going to marry, what's his name, Gerald Wright? Have you any idea when?"
"As soon as possible," said Elaine.
Percival frowned.
"You mean in about 6 months' time?"
"No, I don't. Why should we wait 6 months?"
"I think it would be more decent," said Percival.
"Rubbish," said Elaine. "A month, that's the longest we'll wait."
"Well, it's for you to say," said Percival. "And what are your plans when you are married, if you have any?"
"We're thinking of starting a school."
Percival shook his head.
"That's a very risky speculation in these times. What with the shortage of domestic labour, the difficulty of getting an adequate teaching staff. Really, Elaine, it sounds all right, but I should think twice about it if I were you."
"We have thought. Gerald feels that the whole future of this country lies in right education."
"I am seeing Mr. Billingsley the day after tomorrow," said Percival. "We've got to go into various questions of finance. He was suggesting that you might like to make this money that's been left you by father into a trust for yourself and your children. It's a very sound thing to do nowadays."
"I don't want to do that," said Elaine. "We shall need the money to start up our school. There's a very suitable house we've heard of for sale. It's in Cornwall. Beautiful grounds and quite a good house. It would have to be built on to a good deal. Several wings added."
You mean you're going to take all your money out of the business?" "Really, Elaine, I don't think you're wise."
"Much wiser to take it out than leave it in, I should say," said Elaine. "Businesses are going fut all over the place. You said yourself, Val, before father died, that things were getting into a pretty bad state."
"One says that sort of thing," said Percival vaguely. "But I must say, Elaine, to take out all your capital and sink it in the buying, equipping and running of a school is crazy. If it's not a success, look what happens. You're left without a penny."
"It will be a success," said Elaine doggedly.
"I'm with you." Lance, lying sprawled out in a chair, spoke up encouragingly. "Have a crack at it, Elaine. In my opinion, it'll be a damned odd sort of school, but it's what you want to do, you and Gerald. If you lose your money, you'll at any rate have had the satisfaction of doing what you wanted to do."
"Just what one might have expected you to say, Lance," said Percival acidly.
I know, said Lance. "I'm the spendthrift prodigal son. But I still think I've had more fun out of life than you have, Percy, old boy."
"It depends on what you call fun," said Percival acidly. "Which brings us to your own plans, Lance. I suppose you'll be off again, back to Kenya, or Canada, or climbing Mount Everest, or something fairly fantastic."
"Now, what makes you think that?" said Lance.
"Well, you've never had much use for the stay-at-home life in England, have you?"
"One changes as one gets older," said Lance. "One settles down.
Do you know, Percy, my boy, I'm quite looking forward to having a crack at being a sober businessman." "Do you mean..."
"I mean I'm coming into the firm with you, old boy." Lance grinned. "Oh, you're the senior partner, of course. You've got the lion's share. I'm only a very junior partner. But I have got a holding in it that gives me the right to be in on things, doesn't it?"
"Well, yes, of course, if you put it that way. But I can assure you, my dear boy, you'll be very, very bored."
"I wonder now. I don't believe I shall be bored." Percival frowned.
"You don't seriously mean, Lance, that you're coming into the business?"
"Having a finger in the pie?
Yes, that's exactly what I am doing.
Percival shook his head.
Things are in a very bad way, you know. You'll find that out. It's going to be about all we can do to pay out Elaine her share if she insists on having it paid out.
There you are, Elaine, said Lance. You'll see how wise you were to insist on grabbing your money while it's there to grab.
Really, Lance?
Percival spoke angrily.
These jokes of yours are in very bad taste.
I do think, Lance, you might be more careful what you say, said Jennifer.
Sitting a little way away near the window, Pat studied them one by one. If this was what Lance had meant by twisting Percival's tail, she could see that he was achieving his object. Percival's neat impassivity was quite ruffled. He snapped again angrily.
Are you serious, Lance?
Dead serious.
It won't work, you know. You'll soon get fed up.
Not me. Think what a lovely change it'll be for me. A city office, typists running and going. I shall have a blonde secretary like Miss Grosvenor. Is it Grosvenor? I suppose you've snaffled her, but I shall get one just the same. Yes, Mr. Lancelot. No, Mr. Lancelot. Your tea, Mr. Lancelot.
Oh, don't play the fool, snapped Percival.
Why are you so angry, my dear brother? Don't you look forward to having me share your city cares?
You haven't the least conception of the mess everything's in.
No, you'll have to put me wise to all that.
First, you've got to understand that for the last 6 months, no, more, a year, Father's not been himself. He's done the most incredibly foolish things financially. Sold out good stock, acquired various wildcat holdings. Sometimes he's really thrown away money hand over fist. Just, one might say, for the fun of spending it.
In fact, said Lance, it's just as well for the family that he had taxine in his tea.
That's a very ugly way of putting it. But in essence, you're quite right. It's about the only thing that saved us from bankruptcy. But we shall have to be extremely conservative and go very cautiously for a bit.
Lance shook his head. I don't agree with you. Caution never does anyone any good. You must take a few risks. Strike out. You must go for something big.
I don't agree, said Percy. Caution and economy, those are our watchwords.
Not mine, said Lance.
You're only the junior partner, remember, said Percival.
All right, but I've got a little say-so all the same.
Percival walked up and down the room agitatedly.
It's no good, Lance. I'm fond of you and all that.
Are you? Lance interpolated.
Percival did not appear to hear him.
But I really don't think we're going to pull together at all. Our outlooks are totally different.
That may be an advantage, said Lance.
The only sensible thing, said Percival, is to dissolve the partnership.
You're going to buy me out? Is that the idea?
My dear boy, it's the only sensible thing to do, with our ideas so different.
If you find it hard to pay Elaine out her legacy, how are you going to manage to pay me my share?
Well, I didn't mean in cash, said Percival. We could divide up the holdings.
With you taking the gilt-edged and me taking the worst of the speculative off you, I suppose.
They seem to be what you prefer, said Percival.
Lance grinned suddenly.
You're right in a way, Percy, old boy. But I can't indulge my own taste entirely. I've got Pat here to think of.
Both men looked towards her. Pat opened her mouth, then shut it again. Whatever game Lance was playing, it was best that she should not interfere. That Lance was driving at something special, she was quite sure, but she was still a little uncertain as to what his actual object was.
Line 'em up, Percy, said Lance, laughing. Bogus diamond mines, inaccessible rubies, the oil concessions where no oil is. Do you think I'm quite as big a fool as I look?
Percival said,
Of course, some of these holdings are highly speculative, but remember, they may turn out immensely valuable.
Changed your tune, haven't you? Said Lance, grinning. Going to offer me Father's latest wildcat acquisitions, as well as the old Blackbird mine and things of that kind. By the way, has the inspector been asking you about this Blackbird mine?
Percival frowned.
Yes, he did. I can't imagine what he wanted to know about it. I couldn't tell him much. You and I were children at the time. I just remember vaguely that Father went out there and came back saying the whole thing was no good.
What was it? A gold mine?
I believe so. Father came back pretty certain that there was no gold there. And mind you, he wasn't the sort of man to be mistaken.
Who got him into it? A man called Mackenzie, wasn't it?
Yes. Mackenzie died out there.
Mackenzie died out there, said Lance thoughtfully. Wasn't there a terrific scene? I seem to remember Mrs. Mackenzie, wasn't it? Came here, ranted and stormed at Father, hurled down curses on his head. She accused him, if I remember rightly, of murdering her husband.
Really?
Said Percival repressively. I can't recollect anything of the kind. I remember it, though, said Lance. I was a good bit younger than you, of course. Perhaps that's why it appealed to me. As a child, it struck me as full of drama. Where was Blackbird? West Africa, wasn't it?
Yes, I think so.
I must look up the concession sometime, said Lance, when I'm at the office.
You can be quite sure, said Percival, that Father made no mistake. If he came back saying there was no gold, there was no gold.
You're probably right there, said Lance. Poor Mrs. Mackenzie. I wonder what happened to her. And to those two kids she brought along. Funny. They must be grown up by now.
Chapter 20. At the Pinewood Private Sanatorium, Inspector Neil, sitting in the visitor's parlour, was facing a grey-haired elderly lady. Helen Mackenzie was 63, though she looked younger. She had pale blue, rather vacant-looking eyes, and a weak, indeterminate chin. She had a long upper lip, which occasionally twitched. She held a large book in her lap and was looking down at it as Inspector Neil talked to her. In Inspector Neil's mind was the conversation he had just had with Dr. Crosby, the head of the establishment.
"She's a voluntary patient, of course," said Dr. Crosby. "Not certified."
"She's not dangerous, then?"
"Oh, no. Most of the time she's as sane to talk to as you or I. It's one of her good periods now, so that you'll be able to have a perfectly normal conversation with her."
Bearing this in mind, Inspector Neil started his first conversational essay.
"It's very kind of you to see me, madam," he said. "My name is Neil. I've come to see you about a Mr. Fortescue who has recently died."
Mr. Fortescue. I expect you know the name." Mrs. Mackenzie's eyes were fixed on her book. She said,
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"Mr. Fortescue, madam. Mr. Rex Fortescue."
"No," said Mrs. Mackenzie. "No, certainly not."
Inspector Neil was slightly taken aback. He wondered whether this was what Dr. Crosby called being completely normal.
"I think, Mrs. Mackenzie, you knew him a good many years ago."
"Not really," said Mrs. Mackenzie. "It was yesterday."
"I see," said Inspector Neil, falling back upon his formula rather uncertainly.
"I believe," he went on, "that you paid him a visit many years ago at his residence, Yew Tree Lodge."
"A very ostentatious house," said Mrs. Mackenzie.
"Yes, yes, you might call it that. He had been connected with your husband, I believe, over a certain mine in Africa. The Blackbird Mine, I believe it was called."
"I have to read my book," said Mrs. Mackenzie. "There's not much time, and I have to read my book."
"Yes, madam. Yes, I quite see that."
There was a pause. Then Inspector Neil went on. "Mr. Mackenzie and Mr. Fortescue went out together to Africa to survey the mine."
"It was my husband's mine," said Mrs. Mackenzie. "He found it and staked a claim to it. He wanted money to capitalize it. He went to Rex Fortescue. If I'd been wiser, if I'd known more, I wouldn't have let him do it."
"No, I see that.
As it was, they went out together to Africa, and there your husband died of fever.
I must read my book, said Mrs. Mackenzie.
Do you think Mr. Fortescue swindled your husband over the Blackbird Mine, Mrs. Mackenzie? Without raising her eyes from the book, Mrs. Mackenzie said,
How stupid you are.
Yes, yes, I dare say. But you see, it's all a long time ago, and making inquiries about a thing that is over a long time ago is rather difficult.
Who said it was over?
I see. You don't think it is over?
No question is ever settled until it is settled right. Kipling said that. Nobody reads Kipling nowadays, but he was a great man.
Do you think the question will be settled right one of these days?
Rex Fortescue is dead, isn't he? You said so.
He was poisoned, said Inspector Neil. Rather disconcertingly, Mrs. Mackenzie laughed.
What nonsense, she said. He died of fever.
I'm talking about Mr. Rex Fortescue.
So am I.
She looked up suddenly, and her pale blue eyes fixed his.
Come now, she said. He died in his bed, didn't he? He died in his bed.
He died in St. Jude's Hospital, said Inspector Neil.
Nobody knows where my husband died, said Mrs. Mackenzie. Nobody knows how he died or where he was buried. All anyone knows is what Rex Fortescue said, and Rex Fortescue was a liar.
Do you think there may have been foul play?
Foul play.
Foul play.
Fowls lay eggs, don't they?
You think that Rex Fortescue was responsible for your husband's death?
I had an egg for breakfast this morning, said Mrs. Mackenzie. Quite fresh, too. Surprising, isn't it, when one thinks that it was 30 years ago?
Neil drew a deep breath. It seemed unlikely that he was ever going to get anywhere at this rate, but he persevered. Somebody put dead blackbirds on Rex Fortescue's desk about a month or two before he died.
That's interesting. That's very, very interesting.
Have you any idea, madam, who might have done that?
Ideas aren't any help to one. One has to have action. I brought them up for that, you know, to take action.
You're talking about your children?
She nodded her head rapidly. Yes, Donald and Ruby. They were 9 and 7 and left without a father. I told them. I told them every day. I made them swear it every night.
Inspector Neil leant forward. What did you make them swear?
That they'd kill him, of course.
I see. Inspector Neil spoke as though it was the most reasonable remark in the world. Did they?
Donald went to Dunkirk. He never came back. They sent me a wire saying he was dead. Deeply regret, killed in action. Action, you see. The wrong kind of action.
I'm sorry to hear that, madam. What about your daughter?
I haven't got a daughter, said Mrs. Mackenzie.
You spoke of her just now, said Neil. Your daughter Ruby.
Ruby? Yes,
Ruby. She leaned forward.
Do you know what I've done to Ruby?
No, madam. What have you done to her? She whispered suddenly,
Look here, at the book.
He saw then that what she was holding in her lap was a Bible. It was a very old Bible, and as she opened it, on the front page, Inspector Neil saw various names had been written. It was obviously a family Bible, in which the old-fashioned custom had been continued of entering each new birth. Mrs. Mackenzie's thin finger pointed to the two last names, Donald Mackenzie, with the date of his birth, and Ruby Mackenzie, with the date of hers. But a thick line was drawn through Ruby Mackenzie's name.
You see, said Mrs. Mackenzie, I struck her out of the book. I cut her off forever. The recording angel won't find her name there.
You cut her name out of the book? Now why, madam? Mrs. Mackenzie looked at him cunningly. "You know why," she said. "But I don't, really, madam, I don't."
"She didn't keep faith. You know, she didn't keep faith."
"Where is your daughter now, madam?"
"I've told you, I have no daughter. There isn't such a person as Ruby Mackenzie any longer."
"You mean she's dead?"
"Dead?"
The woman laughed suddenly.
"It would be much better for her if she were dead. Much better. Much, much better."
She sighed and turned restlessly in her seat. Then, her manner reverting to a kind of formal courtesy, she said,
"I'm so sorry, but really I'm afraid I can't talk to you any longer. You see, the time is getting very short, and I must read my book."
To Inspector Neil's further remarks, Mrs. Mackenzie returned no reply. She merely made a faint gesture of annoyance and continued to read her Bible, with her finger following the line of the verse she was reading. Neil got up and left. He had another brief interview with the superintendent. "Do any of her relations come to see her?" he asked. "A daughter, for instance?" "I believe a daughter did come to see her in my predecessor's time, but her visit agitated the patient so much that he advised her not to come again. Since then, everything is arranged through solicitors." "And you've no idea where this Ruby Mackenzie is now?" The superintendent shook his head. "No idea whatsoever."
"You've no idea whether she's married, for instance?"
"I don't know. All I can do is to give you the address of the solicitors who deal with us." Inspector Neil had already tracked down those solicitors. They were unable, or said they were unable, to tell him anything. A trust fund had been established for Mrs. Mackenzie, which they managed. These arrangements had been made some years previously, and they had not seen Miss Mackenzie since. Inspector Neil tried to get a description of Ruby Mackenzie, but the results were not encouraging. So many relations came to visit patients that after a lapse of years they were bound to be remembered dimly, with the appearance of one mixed up with the appearance of another. The matron, who had been there for many years, seemed to remember that Miss Mackenzie was small and dark. The only other nurse who had been there for any length of time recalled that she was heavily built and fair.
"So, there we are, sir," said Inspector Neil, as he reported to the Assistant Commissioner. "There's a whole crazy set-up, and it fits together. It must mean something."
The A.C. nodded thoughtfully. "The blackbirds in the pie, tying up with the blackbird mine, rye in the dead man's pocket, bread and honey with Adele Fortescue's tea. Not that that is conclusive. After all, anyone might have had bread and honey for tea. The third murder, that girl strangled with a stocking and a clothes peg nipped onto her nose. Yes, crazy as the set-up is, it certainly can't be ignored."
"Half a minute, sir," said Inspector Neil.
"What is it?"
Neil was frowning.
"You know, what you've just said, it didn't ring true. It was wrong somewhere." He shook his head and sighed. "Nope, I can't place it.